From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Do I look fuzzy, Ryan?
Like your beard's fuzzy?
No, I just kind of look fuzzy. Hang on.
Maybe a little fuzzy.
Is my camera fuzzy?
I don't know. Maybe. You got the glare in the background. Anyway, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCfootball.com. That's the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network, representing right here if you're watching live on YouTube. And together we make the Podcast of Champions. Once a month or so, talking.
I think I'm representing Jockey.
There you go, Jockey. Big Ten football. Woo! We haven't recorded about a month, and someone just called us out on the Twitters. So
otherwise, the show may have ended. It could have been somebody done. Hadn't called us out on Twitter.
There's not a lot going on, but we're going to talk, you know, my favorite thing, spring football, of course. We do want to get your questions. I think we got a couple. I know we have a voicemail from the Zodiac Killer, which is awesome. So he left one this morning, but you can email us, Big10Cast, all spelled out, BIGTENCAST, at gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Like I mentioned, we did get a voicemail. Shoot us a text. That's fun, too. Tweet us at B1G Podcast, and you can go over to the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify if you're listening to the podcast there. Leave us a 5-star rating. We love that. And if you're on the Apple one, you could also leave a review. And that's been, you know, the biggest content boom in our show is reading your funny reviews. They've been great. I don't know if we have any new ones, David, but that's probably the best part of our show is the listener reviews.
Yeah, we do have, I think, one new one.
Okay.
This is from Darl's Chickens 37, A Tale of Two Conferences. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of recruiting. It was the age of Chip Kelly not recruiting. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring game of Ryan's hope. It was the winter of David's despair. There was a fat coach with a small jaw in Westwood. There was a thin coach with a large jaw in Exposition Park. In both, it was clearer than crystal that things in general were settled forever. It was the year of our Lord, 2022. Spiritual revelations were conceded to the Pac-12 at that favored period, as at this. Beautiful.
That was very beautiful. Nice. No notes.
I loved it from Darl's Chickens.
I think I still
Tale of Two Cities. Tale of Two Cities is an absolute banger. Did you ever read it?
Yeah, back I think in high school or something, like a long time ago.
It's so good. It's so good. It's moving. It makes you feel things. It's great.
All right.
You know?
I mean, I don't remember.
Do you remember anything of it?
Hardly anything.
About sacrifice at the end, sacrificing your life for the love of your life, but you're doing it so the other guy can live. It's amazing. Amazing stuff.
Cool. No? Maybe I'll go back and read it.
You should read A Tale of Two Cities. It's awesome. I know you didn't read it in high school. You're lying.
You think I was lying? It's funny. I read a lot of the classics after high school. I hated English in high school. I became an engineer, and I was good at math and science, not too good at the English stuff. So it's good that I'm in journalism now. But anyway, afterwards, I would go back and read Grapes of Wrath, and my buddy, who was getting his master's in literature or whatever, he would tell me stuff to read, and I would ask him questions about it. I'm like, this was way cooler me reading it on my own than reading it and some teacher telling me what this, when he walks over the railroad tracks, it really was talking about slavery or something, whatever it was. It was some symbolism crap. I'm like, I like the story. I like what's going on. So I liked reading them for pleasure and not for some class. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Sure. Sure. That's the excuse all people use who don't like to read in high school.
I have a lot of books in my thing.
You have many leather bound volumes.
I do. So I try to read more. I haven't read a lot in the last year or so, but then when I went traveling, I went on vacation once, and it's good to have a book on the plane, So
look, I'm talking a lot of shit for a guy who has probably read in the last 10 years, 10 total books.
Really? Okay. So
I was one of those insane people who in middle school, and by insane people, I mean losers. I was one of those people in middle school who would like read all day long. Like, I just read. When I got home, I read. And I shoot hoops and then I go read and I read some more. And now I just do not read. I don't do it except for, on the internet.
Yeah.
On Twitter. I read things in short bursts.
You're like 140 characters or whatever Twitter is now. Uh-huh. I don't know what the, yeah. So we got some people in the chat. If you're watching us live on YouTube, I'll try to put comments up there. Excited for the show today from El Gordo. Alex says, I'm confused how David is talking to Ryan and Ben Howland at the same time. Is David not real? Are you talking to
just interviewed former UCLA head basketball coach Ben Howland. He was awesome. You know, it's really funny. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience talking to a former USC head coach, but Howland, who coached for like 7 years at Mississippi State after UCLA.
Yeah.
Still uses the first person plural when referring to UCLA. Like, oh, we played so well the other night, or we, you know. Yeah, it's all like, you know, and the thing was with him, he grew up a fan of UCLA. Like, he was a child fan, so it was his dream job. So I think he still, you know, still has a little bit of that personal ownership over it. Nice. But it was a very good interview.
Well, we got some questions and stuff in the chat. If you do have a question for us and you're watching us live on YouTube, first of all, thanks very much for doing that. Put the question in the chat. I'll start. We can get back to it later. We got a packed show. I mean, there's so much going on in the world of Big Ten football, right, David? I put a whole bunch of notes in. I know David was supposed to like create the show. We had no discussion of what the topic was going to be. So I'm like, I better put some notes in there for David just so he has something to go on when he makes the show. But
and it worked seamlessly. You didn't even have to speak to me, and I created the show with a cool picture. We're good. We're like a well-oiled machine.
Kinda, yeah. But it's been like
sitting in stasis for a month.
Yeah, I think we have a few questions in the email. But you guys can email us some questions and things like that. The big news. And I think I tweeted about this. Was like a week ago or something. There hasn't been a bigger decision made in the history of college football, in my estimation, that Big Ten Media Days, which, you know, I'm a fan of Media Days. I hadn't
nothing
gone
more important.
I hadn't gone. Where are they? Chicago, I believe. Or were they Indy?
I thought they were
Chicago.
In Indy.
Maybe.
Not Indy?
It was Indy. Yeah. I was going to go. Actually, when it was announced that USC and UCLA were going to join the conference and there were still like 2 years left, I was going to go, and I think I got sick and didn't end up going. And then it ends up being like a pain in the butt. I mean, last year, I think my round trip ticket was going to be like $800 or something. I had people going already. So I'm like, screw it. I won't go. Now I'm going, and you're going too, mother effer. Like, we are both going. I put in the show notes for when it goes up on the podcast. We will, if you're going to show up to this, we'll buy you a beer for sure. Big Ten Media Days in freaking Sin City, Las Vegas. Sorry.
I know. It's
sorry, Griffin. When have
we ever experienced a media day in Las Vegas? This is going to be incredible.
Yes. Never
done it before.
It's so good. At least
it's so amazing how already the pole is shifting. Like, the center of the Big Ten universe.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. And Big Ten listeners, like traditional Big Ten listeners, you don't want to go to Indianapolis for media days. Not that you would. Nobody goes besides media because it's not actually an event. Ryan just likes it. And then two, you don't really want to go there for the Big Ten championship, do you? Or the Big Ten tournament or any
Screw
of this
that.
Stuff. Vegas. Yeah. Vegas is
Vegas
where all this
should happen.
Yeah. It's where it should happen for the ACC. It's where it should happen for the Big East. It's where it should happen for everybody. Everything should be in Las Vegas.
I think like the Champions League final in Europe, just go to Vegas, you know?
Go to Vegas. There's so many hotel rooms. There's so much convention space. Make it happen. Big Ten finally does it right here. And by finally, I mean they didn't do it in year one. They should have done it in year one. Would have been very cool if it had been last year. But they're doing it in year two. And this should be at minimum like a every other year thing. But frankly, just do it every year. It's so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Vegas, baby. So July 22nd to 24th. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be there. David, I'm going to make sure he goes. We would love to see
I'm going.
Okay, good. see some of you Big Ten fans out there, or former Pac-12 fans, or whatever you want. It'd be great to see you. We'll buy you beers. I'm actually going in a couple weeks for the opening weekend of March Madness. Insane. Someone told me that the conference tournament weekend is actually a really good one to go to, too. So a little understated. It's not like March Madness, like insanity. I'm going to do something called
Hoops. We went.
Well, for you, yeah, but gone. I mean, no, we did go there.
You were there last year for the conference tournament.
I know, but I've gone like for every last few years, but like for just being there to part. Like, if you're not affiliated with a conference, you just want to go that weekend. Like, that's just like a fun weekend to go. But
the way you spoke about that was as if you've never been there for a conference tournament.
My apologies, but yes.
But I believe the last three consecutive years you've been there for the conference tournament.
What was the drunk? The 2 years ago or
last year? Last year was the really bad one where we were going to the buffet and we both woke up like at like the farthest extremity of a hangover, like the worst possible feeling.
That was mad.
And then we had to go to the no truck stops, RIP, no truck stops, little get together. That was all last year.
That was good.
That was a rough one.
Well, the one I had to like people the couple years ago is when the security thought that my child had passed out and it was like
correct.
Yeah.
That was 3 years. I think that was 3 years.
That was 3 years ago. Yeah, that was pretty good stuff. But anyway, it'll be awesome in Las Vegas. I think they should do everything there. Our Duck fan, Eric, said that they could rotate it. I put that up on the screen. Between Vegas and Indy, I don't think you should rotate it. Just always have it in Vegas. Like, why rotate?
Have everything in Vegas. Have your regular season, all of the games in Las Vegas.
Indy's not that easy to get to from L.A. Like, there's not as many, like, direct flights. Like, Chicago's obviously easy, but Indy's a little tougher. They like Indy because they got all the tunnels and stuff, and it's great for conventions. Like, they just had the combine.
And you can fly direct to Vegas from pretty much everywhere. Like, it's not hard.
Yeah, like some small town in like.
Look, I'll take Chicago, just not Indianapolis. And it's not because Indianapolis isn't a good town. It is. Like, there's fine stuff there, but Chicago at least is a major hub that you can get to direct from pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, USC has so. The travel schedule for this year, I think I have three flights to Chicago for USC because they play Notre Dame, which is a Chicago flight. It's like an hour and a half drive or 2 hour drive, Illinois and Purdue. I think you just fly into Chicago for all of those, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought you were talking about not doing all these road trips next year.
You know, literally people ask me about it. I was like, I'm going on 30 years of doing this, like insanity, but 21 or whatever, like full time. If USC was still in the Pac-12, I would not be traveling as much. I have a big enough team working for me. I'd let them do it. But there's all these new road trips. Now, I guess Chicago every time is a new road trip. But I haven't been to Illinois. Like, I've been to Champaign. I haven't been to Purdue or anything. So, West Lafayette. And I like going to the Notre Dame game. It's fun. I mean, maybe I'll skip one of those. But we're going to have some Friday night parties in Chicago, a lot of fun. Any chance to go get deep dish pizza, I'm going to go, but maybe after this year I'll stop. We'll see.
I'm sure you can get some deep dish pizza in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you can, but it's just known for that stuff. We do have spring football starting, David. Now, I don't have to.
Wow. We get to talk about media days and spring football.
Your favorite topic.
Oh, my gosh.
These are a few of Dave's favorite things. I was in, I don't know if I texted you this. I was in Project Barley on the Redondo Beach Pier. I think I texted you because I was doing a trivia night. We ended up like winning. Like, I was with some group and we won like the trivia thing or whatever. Like, literally on the TV in Project Barley. So this is like Redondo Pier. It's whatever. Was the Pac-12 network, and they had two young ladies like speaking about Oregon State and Washington State like basketball, and I was like, we could have podcast of champions should have been on the Pac-12 network. Like, that, so many mistakes that they made. We should have been up there on that. But I'm like, why is that even on? How do they still even get this? Does it still exist? Apparently it still did. I didn't even know. I just thought it was like so ironic. You're sitting there trivia, some random bar in Redondo Beach, and Pac-12 network is on a TV that I didn't even know you could still get the Pac-12 network.
Yeah. I think we actually talked about that on the last show.
Did we really?
Yep.
I thought I just texted you.
I don't think so. I think we talked about it. I think we then talked about trivia. Can't remember.
Well, let us know if we did talk about that, because my memory's like, yeah.
It was a month ago.
It was a month ago. And Tale of Two Cities, don't remember that from 30-something, no. whatever years
ago. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Yeah, but Purdue started this week. So new head coach Barry Odom trying to get things rolling. I mean, they were bad. 11 straight games they lost. Pretty bad. They bought in a few, like, quarterback transfers. I think they got to replace the whole, like, wide receiver room. He's a defensive guy. They were one of the worst defenses in the country. So, little action there with Purdue. They tweeted out some photos of the first spring ball. I don't know the exact schedule we have to get for everybody, but they're all going to keep coming. And we'll have full-on spring football practices and updates. Now, it's not going to be the same. We're getting away from spring games, right, David?
Yeah.
Eric says that's a bad idea. He says, shame on all the teams canceling their spring games.
Well, I know Ryan is hurt by it, but USC it just seems it. Like, well, I think it's people falling prey to, again, thinking they're that what they are doing is, I don't know, akin to nuclear science when it's not. And more to the point, like, the whole point of like the sport, right, is for people to watch it, right?
Yes.
And the cool thing about spring is that it was an opportunity for fans to watch it in a time of year where it wasn't normally
not
happening.
A lot going on. Yeah.
And so there's been a movement first for these programs to close spring ball, like generally. And then now to take away or claim they're taking away spring games, but then they'll probably still do them. They'll just have them be closed. And it's just, you're kind of defeating the purpose of the whole game, like of the whole thing. And, you know, off-season practices, you still need them and stuff. But like, this was always a symbiotic thing. You have these spring practices and then you make it into a marketing opportunity and you make it into a spectating opportunity for all these fans so that they can bring their kids out and get autographs and all that kind of stuff. And now they're just, I don't know. I mean, I think it's, again, it goes back to a lot of these coaches, they're way too overpaid. And as overpaid people, they think their jobs are actually important and they think they need to treat them with some level of like self-importance that just, it doesn't need to be there. Nothing you're doing in the spring in any way is going to impact like teams scouting you for the fall. It's just not like, yeah, okay, they might see that your player is good. You know when they're going to see your player is good? Like the first snap of the first game when you're playing most likely some FCS team or whatever. I mean, it's not, I don't know. It's just, it's really self-defeating, I think. And, one of many dozens of moves in the last few years that are just going to hurt the sport in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, the calendar for college football is just unique. And it's got a little messed up recently with December being so much, you know, like signing day being in February, spring ball. You know, they had summer workouts. They spread things out and things are getting a little more condensed. And if they go to some kind of OTA model eventually, I don't think that's good for the sport. I like the way it was. I like the spring games. I mean, the two big complaints, you know, Nebraska and Matt Rule, one of the first ones to shut it down. I think Ohio State and Texas have followed, but Nebraska gets like 60,000-70,000 people for their spring game. It's a huge event there. I remember doing like back in the day, spring football, like I would get calls from Omaha and Lincoln, like radio stations. They were like doing spring football reports from across the country. They want to know what's going on with USC. Like it's a big deal there because there's really not much else going on. And, you know, I think for Matt Rule, it was more about the tampering with the window, the portal opening soon after
which
that.
Which does not make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. What he's saying does not make sense.
And then I know like
because it doesn't open after the spring game. It doesn't. It opens and closes before that would happen.
Oh, depends when your spring game is. When is the portal this year? Is it early April or is
it's mid to late? But you could just have your spring game in the first week of May then. Like,
yeah, you could move it or whatever. Yeah.
It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. It's just stupid football, stupid.
Yeah, I think tampering would be happening anyway. I think some schools, like if you don't get a lot of attendance, I think USC, I think this was partly part of the reason they did. You can be negative recruited, like, oh, not a lot of people are coming out for your spring game. And, you know, I get it, but it's the diehard fans want to come see it, you know? And so if you only get 15, 20,000 or whatever, like still it's something fun for them to do, get some autographs, whatever it is. So I hate that it's going away in a lot of places.
Yeah, it's really disappointing. And hopefully it doesn't harm the sport even more, but like the off-season ecosystem of reports and all that kind of stuff, look, I denigrate it and I joke about it a lot, but it's how you get a lot of, look, we are bloodsuckers, right? Or the media. Everyone hates the media these days, right? But if you don't have the media, if you don't have the media reporting on this stuff and you don't have sports media like putting this stuff out, then you don't know shit about your team going into the season. Like, you don't know anything besides the carefully curated information that comes from your team's official website.
Right.
And it's just, if you're losing that, you're losing a lot of interest because, like, what's the most exciting time in the NBA season these days? Has nothing to do with the season, and it's everything to do with the draft and free agency. NFL is the same way. I swear to God, the NFL draft is more of a big deal than anything besides the Super Bowl. College football has that stuff, but as teams get more and more secretive about recruiting information, more and more secretive about transfer portal recruiting information, even more so, more and more secretive about spring ball, more and more secretive about all this crap, you don't have the off-season ecosystem of information anymore. And without that, okay, well, I guess I'll pay attention to something else for 6 months. And then when it comes around again and it's semi-disappointing, oh, maybe I won't pay attention to that part either. It's just, how do you hook people? By continuing to give them something. And I think it's just another way that I think people are trying to, without trying, but trying to kill the golden goose here.
Speaking of Matt Rhule, there was a game canceled, a series canceled, Tennessee and Nebraska. I think the original report was it was like mutually decided upon, but it became clear that it was Nebraska that canceled the game. I heard a little interview with Matt Rhule talking with Urban Meyer, and his complaint, he said, I mean, he made it really clear, like, I have no idea why anyone would want to schedule a good out-of-conference game like that. He said in the past seasons, it seemed like those games didn't matter anyway. It just mattered what you did in the conference. He was comparing the SEC schedule to a Big Ten schedule because they – he said a lot of the SEC teams had three real road games, and here in the Big Ten, you get like five. So it's harder, you know, with the extra conference game. You're on the road more. Like, why would you schedule a game like that? So I don't know what you think about that. I like to see those games, and I think with the expanded playoff, it makes it so that it's not going to hurt you as much. So there's reasons to play them, and if they end up going with the automatic qualifiers that's been proposed, then it's really about finishing top four in your conference. And you could lose to like Miami, Alabama, and Texas in week one, two, and three, and then do well in conference play. And it doesn't matter. You know, with four losses, you're still getting into the playoff if you finish in the top four, if that ends up going through. But I don't know. I don't really agree with his comments there, but any thoughts on those big out-of-conference games and if they're going to go away?
Of course they're going to go away for the same reasons. Well, first, the babble I was just saying about people killing the golden goose without really trying. This is another way, and it was foreseeable with the super conference moves. But yeah, it doesn't behoove Matt Rhule to play a hard game in non-conference. Why would he? For the same reason you just said, if they go automatic bids, why does he need to play the tough conference game, non-conference game? Why would he have to?
Well, it wouldn't hurt you. And it's like,
but why would he have to? What's his contract tied to? Wins and losses, baby.
Yeah.
He wants wins. So why would he ever schedule a hard non-conference game if he doesn't have to?
I don't know. I'd like test you, but they're great. The one thing I do think is that you need to have the two big conferences having the same number of conference games. Like the SEC needs to go to 9. And then I think if that happens, there can be some sort of schedule alliance. We love the like not having to schedule games 50 years ahead of time. But if you had some kind of deal where the top teams from both of those conferences like play each other early in the season.
If you just made another NFL, that would be another NFL with worse play. But yeah, you could do that.
No, but I mean,
you just have the Big Ten and the SEC, and those are the two leagues, and they play each other in, say, three different cross-conference matchups a year. And then otherwise,
play
games against each other.
Just like have one game, like the top, you know, like Ohio State plays.
It doesn't behoove either league to do that. Like they could, but like the member teams aren't going to want to add losses. They're just not. And I think a lot of the ways we used to think about college football and like these cool home and homes and all that kind of stuff. Already they've been on the way out. You see a lot more neutral site stuff when they're actually doing a marquee non-conference game.
Yeah.
But it's the way of it when these conferences are becoming larger and full of more, you know, good teams, and people have kind of figured out how to game the system a little bit better. So it just, for the SEC, it rarely makes sense. Because their strength of schedule is always going to be super, super strong in the SEC because of how the SEC teams are rated. And for the Big Ten, it's much the same. The other leagues might have to do it. And that's why the other leagues might end up having, you know, more fun and watchable games, especially in non-conference play. But I think for the major conferences, Big Ten, SEC now, I think those big non-conference home and homes are going to be very few and far between.
We'll see.
It's super disappointing. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I think it's really, really disappointing, and they should, you know, there should be a way to figure out how to incentivize that, but that way has not come yet.
TV's driving a lot of this. TV wants those games, so that would be the one.
Neutral sites. They want them in neutral sites.
You mentioned, like, overrated. Like, I'm not getting into hoops much. Is the SEC overrated as a conference this year? Just they all play each other and everyone gets pumped up, or what is that?
I don't know. It's like a closed system, so it's really hard to tell. I think it's somewhat overrated, but to like what extent, it's hard to determine, because the analytics system that everybody uses, it's kind of baked into the model from the preseason that these teams are really good. And so then when they play each other and beat up on each other, that doesn't really hurt it. And if they do fine in the non-conference, that also doesn't hurt it. So it's just, you don't know until the postseason. And even then, you don't really know because it's a sampling issue. But my like general sense is, yeah, maybe a touch, but I still think it's probably the best conference in the country.
All right. We got a little news stuff here. We have
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
They were set to close the season with...
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap. November 29th, they're going to move that to Ford Field, David. They did that in 2023 when they played Penn State in the season finale. So, yeah. So they're going to do a Ford Field game.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. To let people know that. The last thing I want to talk about is I think when we said like conference realignment is going to slow down, well, there's a major settlement was reached this week in ACC world with, if you remember, Florida State and Clemson were suing the ACC. The ACC sued Florida State and Clemson back. Jim Phillips, the commissioner, was trashing those schools at different points. I mean, it was a bad look all around, but they've come up with a settlement, and it's actually something very similar I think Florida State proposed a few years ago. So, what's going to happen is they're going, I think 40% of the overall TV revenue is going to be split, and the other 60% is going to depend on your TV ratings, which, talk about things that are baked in, like Florida State was 2-10 last year and still got really good ratings. So it'll basically pay off the bigger brands more money, and significantly more. I think there's like a $15 million swing between the top and the bottom. There's incentives in there and things like that. So that'll be, put into place, and also there will be a clearly defined for the grant of rights exit fee. Before there was an exit fee, but you weren't even sure if you could hold your own TV rights. Now there will be the case, and I think it's going to go down every year. This basically just sets things in place to say, all right, this is fine for now, but in 2030, probably all hell will break loose. It'll be like a $75 million exit of Florida State or Clemson or Miami or North Carolina, whoever, if they want to leave. So I think in this case, it's a good thing for Florida State and Clemson. They basically got what they were asking for. They're going to get more money. We'll see how this ends up working. To me, David, it was more about the ACC and Jim Phillips looking at the conference we used to cover, the Pac-12, going, we don't want that. And maybe before, like the Wake Forest and Boston Colleges of the world were like, we don't want uneven distribution of wealth here. But would Oregon State and Washington State take that deal now when they balked on it before, giving like the bigger schools more money? I think they would, because the whole conference, you know, imploded. So I think that's what was happening here. The ACC had to take a deal, and they tried to push it as like it was a good deal for the ACC. My opinion, this is good for the bigger schools and not necessarily for the ACC. It's good that they're staying together. But anyway, we shouldn't have too much movement for that conference until 2030, and probably everywhere else too. But anyway, that was my thoughts on it. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think your analysis is correct. I do think this stabilizes the ACC. I mean, you can't ever predict what's going to go on anywhere else, but like that seemed like the domino everyone was waiting to fall, and doesn't sound like it's going to fall now. But yeah, I mean, I think as far as the existential, you know, crisis that the Pac-12 was going through, I think if anybody had had a really serious indication like that USC wasn't just bluffing, I think it would have been a different conversation. But I think it was some arrogance. I think that's the way the other Pac-12 schools had operated for a long time towards USC and UCLA to some extent, going back to like the 1950s. But I also think it was just they didn't understand how aggressively led USC and UCLA were by people who had no connection to the conference whatsoever and had no, didn't really care whether the thing blew up. As much as like previous, you know, like if whoever, Pat Hayden had been USC's AD, I don't think that happens.
No, it wouldn't.
If Mike Garrett was USC's AD, I don't think it happens. If Dan Guerrero was UCLA's AD, UCLA doesn't leave. But it was Mike Bowen and Martin Jarman, and neither of them gave two shits about the Pac-12 and its history and all that kind of stuff. And I think it was these institutions operating under the assumption that UCLA and USC still at heart traditionalists want to preserve all that stuff. And I think they ran into a time when UCLA and USC were both led by guys who did not give a shit about that.
Yeah. I mean, hindsight's 2020, but obviously if you're Oregon State, Washington State, you're like, yes, give us less money. Let's keep the conference together. Right. Like,
Hindsight being 2020, I mean, once we get two or three more years down the road, I think you're going to have conversations like that among USC and UCLA administrators as well.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, it could be a bad deal for everybody, but the worst deal is that the conference imploded. So would you take some less money so you could just stay in the same conference? I think a lot of those schools would at this point, but.
Yeah. And I think if you gave USC and UCLA the offer right now of you get $45 million a year, $50 million a year, and you get to stay in the Pac-12 and everyone else gets 25 or 30, I think they would take it too.
I think they would seriously consider it. Yeah.
So it's, I think a lot of people who didn't have a lot of foresight, and that includes the people who decided to leave.
Cool. All right. Well, that's all I got in my notes.
I made no notes, so I think that's it.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got some questions. Alrighty, we're back here on the podcast of champions.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. I think we have a few emails. I do have a voicemail. So I think like the Frank, like this is
I don't think we did that one. Yeah.
February 5th, because I think the last show was February 4th, like literally a month ago. Frank in Sacramento, he said, actual question, usually has statements. Can we stop calling Lan Danning the best coach around? Kalen DeBoer beat him three times in close games. Did we do this one or no?
And
2022, 2023 in games where Oregon had a huge talent advantage over Washington. Lanning too often got tricked into going for it on fourth down and lost all three games by 3 points. Lanning's teams squeaked by Ohio State at home in October of 2024 when the Ohio State quarterback screwed up his clock management. Ohio State then blew out Oregon in the rematch in the recent neutral site playoff game. Great opponents outcoach him regularly. Lanning does not deliver in spite of all the talent Phil Knight and Nike send his way.
I think that's a really aggressive take about Dan Lanning. First, let's fact check just a little bit, Frank. I love you. He didn't get tricked into going for it on fourth down all those times. He was doing the right thing. It was correct. It was objectively correct every time. Now the play calls, maybe not.
Right.
But objectively correct decisions on fourth down. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They just didn't work. Kalen DeBoer is a little bit of a witch too. So just again, keep that in mind.
Yes.
I think Lanning is a very good coach. I think he's an excellent recruiter. And I think he's a good game manager. I think he's won games for that team with his game management. I think, you know, there's some warts, there's some stuff, but I think he's done a good job generally selecting coordinators. He is a defensive guy by background, but in two straight seasons, he had Kenny Dillingham, and then he got Will Stein to be his offensive coordinator. And I think both have been pretty good. Tosh has been, I think, better than anyone would have conceived of as a defensive coordinator. So I think he's done a pretty fair job. I think Ohio State was a buzzsaw, but the other number that's important to understand about this season for Oregon is 13, which is how many wins they had. One was the number of losses. You go 13-1 in a major conference, you're doing a lot of things right. He has six total losses in his tenure now. And yes, Oregon has a lot of talent, but you don't have to go too far back into the annals of Oregon history to see coaches underperforming with a lot of talent. In fact, you go one coach back, and it's Mario Cristobal, who I don't think ever saw a fourth quarter he did not want to hilariously mismanage. I think Dan Lanning is a very good coach. I don't think he's the best coach ever. Unfortunately, that honor goes to his understudy, Kenny Dillingham, who is, in fact, the best coach of all time, because, once again, he won a game with a tight end playing quarterback against UCLA on the road in 2023.
Not just going to play because it's fun. If you don't expect to win every game, you got a problem. I don't care if I'm playing Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm not playing to lose.
Our buddy Kenny Dillingham. We got to get him on the show.
He's so good and so insane. I love him so much.
And I think, yes, does he have like a checkbook that's, there's no end to it or you can get players, but you have to recruit well also. It's not just here's dollars. Like, they are relentless recruiters. They do an amazing job on the recruiting trail, and it helps to have unlimited resources, but still there's a part of it that if you just had unlimited money, but you weren't like talking to everyone and knocking on every door and calling everybody, like, it wouldn't work as well. I think it's all working well. And he's only been head coach for a few years. Like, I think the jury's out long-term, but analytically, it seems like he makes a lot of good decisions. I think he's made some good hires. I don't think he's this overrated guy. I mean, he's winning a lot of games, and we'll see if he can get over the top and win the big one. Like David said, Ohio State was a buzzsaw. Huge win to get, in Eugene to get a win over the Buckeyes. And we saw them lay a major egg against Michigan and then completely flip the script on, like, hey, what are we good at? Let's do that. And once they started doing that, they blew everybody out. You know, it wasn't a... Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't be trashing our boy Land Danning.
No. All right. This is from Crispy Bruin. Jaden Daniels, Rookie of the Year. Hey, champions. Since we're in the offseason content drought, I wanted to get Dave's thoughts on Jaden Daniels winning NFL Rookie of the Year and propelling his team to the NFC Championship. While Dave never explicitly said anything about Jaden not having NFL talent, there seemed to be some level of that idea implied in claiming he'd never start a game at LSU. Anyways, keep the offseason content coming. I'm very excited to hear what Ryan thinks about Northwestern's new special teams analyst. Dave,
oh my God,
please make time to apologize to the listenership for flip-flopping on noted Taylor Swift bathroom break albums, Folklore and Evermore. Keep it mediocre, Crispy Bruin.
I think Northwestern special teams is going to be really good. That analyst that they brought in, he was, he's great. I don't know.
Jaden Daniels. So a big part of this was my assumption based on his lack of tremendous success under Herm Edwards at ASU was that he was not going to play well or perform well at LSU. My other bit of analysis was that Jaden Daniels is approximately 135 pounds soaking wet, and I didn't think he would hold up in the SEC. He is still about 135 pounds soaking
He's
wet.
He's not big, yeah.
But however, he was able to win the Heisman at LSU and play in the NFL, which just goes to show you.
And win NFL Rookie of the Year.
Which just goes to show you, reality is incorrect. We are living in a simulation. All of my analysis was absolutely perfect. But I've been dead now for 6 years, and this is all a dream.
I remember like covering Jaden Daniels like in high school, and it was one of those, like the neck and his helmet just looked like it was different. Like it just didn't fit right or whatever. He's not a big dude. But yeah, that's like one of the greatest takes ever where like, he's not even going to start. Oh, he wins the Heisman and the NFL Rookie of the Year.
So good. You know, I've had some doozies in my time, but that's got to be up there. Like, that's got to be one of the best.
I mean, I think we've all said really dumb things, but you would most of the time it's glanced over, right? But that's
I have a
called
knack
out
for
is
takes,
great
for takes that just age immediately like milk.
It was so definitive, and the fact that I wouldn't even remember it, but somebody called it out, and then it just became like this. Oh, by the way, he won the Heisman, dumbass.
It's so good, so good.
That's so good. Kevin says, "Speed. Did you remember the fastest kid in your elementary school? Any chance you know what they're up to now? Do you remember?"
In my elementary school?
Yeah, God, this is like I have. So I have a name.
One of them, Matt Engel, who was the starting quarterback for El Segundo High. I think he's a real estate agent now.
Okay.
A good one. He was fast. He was a very good athlete.
All right.
I don't know who else.
So this is, I mean, I'm older than you. This was in the like late 70s, maybe 80 or 81. We were in Western Pennsylvania. We moved to Massachusetts like fifth grade. So most of my elementary school was in Pennsylvania. I remember a kid lived near me, Brian Berheny. I think it was like Irish or something, but I was a good athlete, but I wasn't like a fast athlete. Like I was better at baseball, like hand-eye coordination stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember like, I was like, oh, thinking about football. And I was super skinny kid too. Like Jaden Daniels skinny. And I remember seeing him like running in his backyard in his like football pads, and he was running like really freaking fast. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So I think that convinced me not to play organized football, just watching him run.
Yeah.
I have no idea what he's up to. That was a long
time. It was really fun. I knew at a very young age, like a very young age, like I got no shot, like none, because I would run hard. Like I'd run really, really hard, but it's like I had cement feet. Like it's just, I can't go, like, it's not even just, I can't go as fast as they can. I'm running as hard as I can, and they're running past me like that scene in Captain America where it's Anthony Mackie running, but then got Super Soldier running past you and zooming past you constantly. It'd be like that. Just no speed, none, no quickness, no explosion. I've got really good balance. You can't knock me over
good.
Very well.
My balance but is terrible, it. Too.
That's what I've got. Everything else, not there.
Good that you have good balance. Like, yeah, mine's not. If I was on a skateboard, I would die. It's funny. Like, on the volleyball court, I can be, like, quick and get the balls, and I think a lot of it's anticipation. But just, like, running, I'm just not – I don't have a good top-end speed. I'm not fast. And I saw that, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to play that.
Yeah,
but,
no.
We got a voicemail from a fan favorite. Guess who's back?
Well, well, well. Hello, Brian. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right, it's me. This resident Rutgers fan. Woo! Man, wish there was something in the world to keep me occupied in between college football podcasts. I mean, just nothing going on out here. Just nothing at all. It's boredom. This B-O-R-E-D-U-M-B. But I do actually have a football-related question. I was checking out the Pac-12 diaspora and noticed that Stanford in the transfer portal had picked up a former UCLA offensive tackle. A guy by the name of Nicky Penagos, I think, or Penangos. Dave, correct me. please correct my pronunciation. And I just want to know, what are we getting, Dave? Are we upgrading? What can you tell me about the dude? Similarly, Ryan, we have picked up former modern day and USC wideout CJ Williams to pair with Elijah Brown. I know he took a stop at USC. I just want to know what your impressions are, what you think is happening to the future ACC powerhouse. And I guess if I had a final question, would be Big Ten basketball. Is it everything you dreamed it would be? Keep it mediocre, boys.
All right. Zodiac Killer's back.
He's back, baby. Nicky Prongos. He was a walk-on heading into this year. He immediately outperformed expectations. He started a game, I think, to start out the year at guard. Then he moved to left tackle because UCLA was down a bunch of left tackles and actually performed pretty well. A lot of upside. He's a well-built, I would say, like 295, and easily could add more weight. Moves really, really well. I think he's got, assuming he develops, I think he has some NFL upside. But I think given what I know about Stanford this year, I think he would be an upgrade over what they had this year.
And CJ Williams only spent 1 year at USC, did go to modern day. He spent his last two at Wisconsin. You know, he's played, I think, almost every game at Wisconsin, and he played a bunch at USC, averaged, I think, about a catch a game, something like that. Had a couple, you know, his biggest plays were against Purdue the last 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I mean, he's fine. You know, he's like kind of a, you know, I think he's like 6'2", like 190-ish, something in that range. But, you know, he played, but it wasn't like someone that jumped off the page when you just watched or anything. But yeah, it could be a piece of a role player, I think, for what the Cardinal are doing up there.
As for the Big Ten, I would say it's been kind of what I expected it was going to be. UCLA is 2-5 in games east of Colorado. So that's all the Big Ten away games in the Big Ten, I should say, because they also played North Carolina in New York and lost that one too. So they're actually 2-6 in games.
The travel games.
In games east of Colorado. I think I said west earlier. So that's not good. And then USC is having a horrible season, in large part not aided by the terrible road slate. And scheduling for the West Coast teams has been bad. The Big Ten did a bad job. I think the spacing between the games has been a problem. They're sticking these teams on the road for full weekends or full weeks. So you've got USC traveled to Northwestern on a Tuesday, stayed out there until Friday for Purdue, then went home. That's really hard on the kids, really hard on the coaches, and makes it hard to prepare both before and after because they had home games sandwiching that period on Saturday and Tuesday. It wasn't well conceived. I think moving to something akin to the old Pac-12 model where you're playing mostly Thursday, Saturday, Thursday, Sunday would be better, but obviously everyone's beholden to TV now, and so there's going to be Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday night games for the foreseeable future. I think they can do a better job scheduling, though, for the Big Ten West Coast teams. It seems like a lot of times the Big Ten team that would be staying out west would have an advantage over the UCLA or USC that was coming back from a road trip. Because, like, say, Ohio
sometimes
State or whatever,
there. Yeah, I think
they'd be hanging out for a few days in the West, while yeah. UCLA then ends up being the one with the body clock issues because they're coming from the East Coast. So it was stupid. They did a stupid job doing the schedule. I don't know how much of it was like new member hazing, if that was a part of it. But this is what we were talking about. Mostly about football, but we mentioned basketball when we were talking about the move originally, but there's a competitive cost to being in an East Coast Midwest centered league. And this is that competitive cost. You have insane road trips. They don't really like, yeah, they have to come out west maybe twice in a season. Maybe you have to go out east 7 times a season. It's just different. It's harder. And it's going to come with a competitive cost. It's going to make it harder to win the league, going to make it harder to win as many games, going to make it harder to get as good a seed, going to make it harder. This is knowable. This was knowable. This is all easily knowable stuff.
So you're saying there's no way you could have seen this coming. I get it. All right, it's fine. So the big sports, West Coast team, Oregon wins football. It looks like one of the West Coast teams are probably going to win the women's basketball, USC and UCLA, the top two, right? We'll see what happens in the tournament, but USC won the regular season. Is there a chance for men's basketball that a West Coast team wins the tournament? Could it be a sweep of the big sports that West Coast, you know, the new additions, like win all of the conference championships? I don't know much about the men's hoop stuff, so that's why I'm
no men's. You. Men's is going to be won by like Purdue or some state.
Michigan. Okay, so
yeah, no, I think so. In the Big Ten, the closest is UCLA, and they have no chance of winning it at this point. There's one game remaining. I think Michigan State might have clinched it, maybe.
Oh, but I mean, nearly. like the tournament. Who do you think?
Oh, the tournament will be won by probably one of the top 4 seeds. So that'll be Michigan State, Purdue, or Wisconsin.
Okay, so you don't think. Like
so the way the Big Ten tournament is structured is that there are byes and there are double byes.
Yeah.
So the double byes are owned by the top 4 seeds. So they only have to play 3 games. UCLA and Oregon will each have a single bye, I think.
Okay.
If all shakes out well. So they'll have to play on the Thursday. Yeah, I mean, they could win it. I mean, UCLA and Oregon are two of, you know, probably realistically 8 teams that could win this thing. But it would take a lot of doing. I mean, UCLA has been competitive with Michigan State. They won that game. They were competitive at Purdue. They lost that one. They beat Wisconsin at home. They were non-competitive though against Maryland and Michigan. Maybe that's changed. Maybe it hasn't, but, they'll have to figure some things out to make it happen. And Oregon is just, they just haven't necessarily shown that really top level this year.
All right. We got a few chat questions. We'll get out of here. Dave, how many years until the playoff expands so much until spring ball starts before the Natty? How many teams would that be?
That'd be amazing. I mean, I think we're going to see the, what's the next stupid thing? They're going up to 16. Is that the idea?
It could be. I think the talk is 14 or 16. So 14 would be, then you get like the Big Ten and the SEC get their conference champions a bye. And then 16 is like nobody gets a bye.
But okay.
That's the talk that I've heard.
I mean, look, Dave, it's only getting dumber and dumber. So, I mean, no bets are off. I think more than likely spring ball just gets canceled at some point and they start doing just pure OTAs in the summer.
Yeah, that would suck because we need like content all year round and like just getting rid of spring ball out. You know, they need the signing day back in February. Well,
just think about the NFL structure and then just apply that to college football because that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So it'll be OTAs that are, you know, barely covered and that'll be it.
Yeah. Well, they don't have free agency during the playoffs. So at least college football can fix
that. Well, I'm sure they'll figure out a way to do portal stuff during that period.
Yeah. Alex. There was a thread on Bro a week ago about buyer's remorse joining the Big Ten and USC land giving football and basketball this year. Is Ryan seeing any buyer's remorse? There's not a lot of people really talking about that as much, like, especially for
fairness, I haven't heard it a bit from the administration at UCLA. I think it's going to take a while for that to sink in.
Yeah, I don't, certainly not from the administration side, but that's not usually something that the fans I've heard too much about. Like early on, there was some, like losing the Cal Stanford games. Like there was kind of remorse about that. But I don't think that everyone's like, oh, this is, you know, we're not competitive now. Like basketball is like basketball, USC basketball, whatever. They've underachieved for a long time. And football, they haven't been able to get out of their own way. I don't think it's looking at it as, I mean, yeah, they didn't win road games. The only road game they won in conference was UCLA, which if you didn't get the non-playing road games or whatever. But I don't think they, USC fans were kind of blaming it on the Big Ten. Like it made it more difficult that you were going to Maryland instead of Washington State. But I don't think they're more like blaming their team for being bad than, you know, why shouldn't have joined the Big Ten. Like, I think they felt they would still struggled if they were in the Pac-12. They just, it was their own doing for a lot of their mistakes, I guess. That's the kind of general feel I got.
Yeah,
I don't,
okay.
Do you hear it from like UCLA fans? Like, why'd we do this? But like, I don't hear a lot of that.
I see it. Yeah, for sure. I think there's, well, there was that thread on the message board, but I think for some people, it's the traditional stuff. You don't have Cal and Stanford and all those other yearly matchups anymore in football and in basketball. But then I think, like, I don't know, maybe USC fans, they're just operating from such a different level of arrogance.
Probably, they think that, yeah.
Well, I think it's a little bit of like, I'm just a temporarily embarrassed millionaire, like that classic American attitude, where, oh, no, we're temporarily embarrassed national title contenders, but it's more about we suck, not this move to the Big Ten sucked.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any way to look at USC season fairly and not say one or two of these losses don't happen if they're not in the Big Ten. Like, yeah, one or two of these are flipped the other way, and then suddenly it's a very different season. Not disappointing. It would still be disappointing, but it would be a very different type of disappointing. And I think for UCLA, it's the same thing. I mean, I don't think UCLA fans, I think they've got a sense of realism about their place in the world a little bit better. And I think there's just concern, you know, that is this just the way things are now? Like, are you just, I think the reality of UCLA right now is that lower down on the totem pole, the danger of becoming Purdue is a little bit more stark. When you're looking at things, or like even the danger of becoming Nebraska. I think that's a little worrying. And I think it was, again, something that you could foresee these issues. You could foresee the competitive problems with being in this league. And there are ramifications of that. People don't like to watch their team lose. And at a certain level, if you watch your team lose over and over again, you know what it stops becoming? Your team. People don't like to take ownership over losers, especially not in Los Angeles. They'll just move on to something else.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there's anybody listening to this is probably a diehard, right? Like, you'll be following the team you follow till the day you die, no matter what they're doing. But for every, you know, diehard, there's 10 casuals, and the casuals are the ones you lose when you're just a loser. And when you're adding yourself to the Big Ten, you're adding, I don't know. I don't know what the math is going to work out to in the end, but it'll probably be an aggregate at least half to one loss a year, right? Like, from just, you got to go on the road more. You got to go on the road farther more. And people always conflate this with the argument about player health and all that kind of stuff. And I want to say this in like the kindest way I can. I don't give a shit about that. Like, I do, like, and I give it like on a human level, but like from the point of this discussion, I think, because that was an initial talking point from a lot of people, people then treat that as the talking point. Well, they're on chartered jets. It doesn't matter. And I'm like, no. But the competitive stuff has been studied. It's been studied at the NFL level, where they've got all the support they can possibly want. It's been studied at the NBA level, where they have all the support they could possibly want. It has an impact. And if you're traveling that far, it has an impact. And it's going to impact not these individuals and whether they're tired or not, but whether or not you win the game. And if you win or lose is what matters, and you're going to see more losses, and you just will. And that's something all these schools have to reckon with. And I think it's something maybe UCLA fans are a little bit more cognizant of right now than USC fans might be.
We have a question from Trojan Fight. Why can't a fan attend media day? I mean, I guess it's media day, not fan day. I don't know. Like, that's it's there. I don't know if
there's been credentials. Like, it's a credentialed event. So yeah. It's like anything else. Here's the thing.
It's a working event. You're working.
The most important thing to understand about media day is it's not an event. It's not supposed to be. It is, but it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be an opportunity for media to go talk to all of these different coaches and get it all in one fell swoop. But it's turned into a thing that the media actually covers, because we love to stare at our own assholes. And that is what it is.
Sorry, Griffin.
But it's not an event. It's not a real thing. It is just an opportunity for us to talk to these guys. That's it.
Yeah. They should have a golf tournament. Speaking of, just to talk to the guys, we need a golf tournament in Vegas.
I don't want to golf.
Yeah, but I do. I think the SEC had a golf tournament.
How about we top golf?
Ooh, so that would be fun too. That would be great. I like it.
I can top golf.
I'm going Thursday top golf. Mm. Yeah. Guess what? West Texas Mike. Two West Texas Mikes to hear if Ryan still believes in Lincoln Riley. The past shows, David took shots at him and Ryan didn't say a word in his defense, just stared blankly into the distance. Like
this. He believes in his buyout, that's for sure.
Yeah, like I think USC fans sort of trashed him early, and I was like, all right, well, I mean, he's got a proven track record. From what I've seen, there's a lot of shortcomings. And then people are like, well, now you should advocate for him to be fired. Like, the way to finish 6-6 last season is to me, you lose to Maryland and that's their only win. That's a fireable offense. But I'm also in the real world and I've been told and know that the buyout is crazy. I don't know if people in the athletic department would have wanted to fire him. They might have wanted to. They cannot. I don't even know if they could after this year if it's another bad season. So it's sort of one of those things where you could say, okay, you know, I told you when I thought Clay Helton should be fired. I told you when, you know, Steve Sarkisian or whatever it was, like if they were doing poorly. You can't be 13-11 the last 2 years with the kind of roster you had. You've underperformed for sure. So, yeah, like I think that he's got serious problems. I think I'm going to give kudos to the athletic department for, like, hiring a really good defensive staff, keeping a guy like Danton Lynn, who Penn State really wanted, and they went out and got Jim Knowles and paid him over $3 million. They finally hired a real, like, personnel staff, so they're actually recruiting, like, Southern California, some stupid stuff, like stuff that Chip Kelly would do with UCLA, like UCLA was doing, I mean, USC was doing stuff. So they fixed, like, basically everything around Lincoln Riley, and if you still don't win, then it's, like, the only can point to the top. So that's my take on it.
Yep.
Yeah. And then thank you for that. I think we got one more from Tony.
I can read it.
You want to do that? The boys one?
Wait, where is it? I don't see it.
It's a little bit older. That's fine. I got it. Boys, do you think Notre Dame to the Big Ten in 2023 is realistic? The Big Ten and Notre Dame's TV deals both expire after 2029.
No.
Yeah, so I think that this new deal with the ACC, the Notre Dame is going to play like the premier, I think Clemson every year, and then the bigger, like Miami and Florida State more, which sort of screws like the Wake Forest of the world anyway, because if your revenue's based on ratings and you're going to play Notre Dame less, if you play Notre Dame, that's a ratings boost no matter what. So I think they would like, I think the intention is to stay independent. But 2030, everything could be, we could have Super League. We don't know what the landscape's going to look like. And I think it's going to depend on the playoff. This current version of the playoff was built by, I mean, Notre Dame was one of the architects of it. So it's working out well. You know, Notre Dame made it a championship this year. Down the road, if there's automatic qualifiers and all that kind of stuff, and more things tied to being in one of the power conferences, it could behoove Notre Dame that would make more sense to be in one. But with the whole sport's going to look a lot different then. And I think, you know, I think we're going to see major leagues coming together and all that stuff. But
yeah,
what do you think? Matthew says Notre Dame's terrified to join a conference.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think they like being able to control the vast majority of their schedule every year.
Yeah.
And they don't have any incentive to. They still have access. I mean, they're going to have access. Notre Dame will always have a carve out. They can game the system pretty effectively with a control over, you know, again, they have to play a couple of games every year, but they control the other chunk of them.
But if it's going to be harder to schedule, If there's reasons that the SEC and the Big Ten wouldn't want to schedule Notre Dame in the new format or whatever, Then it could be problems for Notre Dame scheduling and all that. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to look a lot different. We have no idea what it's going
to
be.
Money is still going to rule that. The opportunity to do a home and home with Notre Dame is still going to be a factor. And I know this kind of goes counter to what I was saying earlier, but Notre Dame is a different deal because it's like for the road games, it's like a thing you can pitch to your like season ticket holders for years in advance saying, hey, you got to get your deposits in because that's going to be what's counting towards the lottery to eventually get part of our allotment for the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
Like I know UCLA did that way back in the day when they went to Notre Dame in like 06 or whatever it was. That's one area. And then two, like that home game, that's going to be a sellout and you're going to have a whole shitload of fans there. And it's just, I think that's always going to have cachet. It's going to do incredible ratings. And so I think that's going to matter to schools and they're going to want to schedule that no matter what.
So a shout out to Matthew. He says, I loved your episode with Connor on the Peristyle podcast with Chad Bowden. Seems like a super bright dude. Yeah. So we just talked about the USC's new GM, but thanks. No, I just want to shout out Matthew because he comes to watch the USC show, even though he's not a USC fan. So, did he go over the broadcast? Do you guys, Matthew, going over there? Are you doing YouTube on the broadcast or no?
No.
Okay. So, maybe I think Matthew's more of a YouTube guy, but thanks, Matthew, for the support over there. We appreciate it. And appreciate you guys being here. Everyone that was in the chat is great. It's great to have live interaction. We can put the comments and stuff up on the screen. We had our Zodiac Killer in the chat, which was great. He mentioned David Shaw. He's like, you didn't mention David Shaw as far as the coaching stuff goes, David. I pull it back there, but he's the new Detroit Lions passing game coordinator.
Great.
Yes.
Good luck, Detroit.
Sweet stuff. I need to play something real quick just because I like.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Zignetti kills.
I just missed it, so.
I like it.
I hope Indiana's good this year, because if not, we can't play it. It's like, damn.
We need to be able to play that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he said no YouTube. You got to get on YouTube.
Got to get on the tube.
The tube. All right. Well, good show. It's good to be back. Thanks for whoever called us out on Twitter for not doing a show, and then David mentioned me. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't an organizer. I don't think David was. So I just sort of was one of those things where.
No, it was sort of one of those things where I think I had thought about it a couple of times. And I'm like, well, Ryan has a message about it. So it must not be important.
Right. I think this happens in marriages sometimes. Like if the wife doesn't wants the husband to take out the trash and he's not doing it, she just like lets it sit there and see how long it'll sit. Like, I'm not saying I was doing that to see how long it was.
We are saying that, though, that this show is trash. This is household trash.
Oh, he does love
and the guess what? We have completed taking out the garbage, Ryan.
Yeah.
We did it together.
Matthew does say he listens to the broadcast, though. So he's loved the broadcast he's listened to. But just get on YouTube. He likes the YouTube stuff. Well, thanks for the – we got a West Texas Mike, couple of them in the chat. Thank you for the super chat. Thanks, everyone, for tuning back in. But email us. Like, give us show ideas. Like, if there's topics, you know, preferably about Big Ten football. But if it's
– Or not. Whatever.
Or something else, it's fine, too. That makes us do less work or
history questions,
more notes,
anything,
a book review of Tale of Two Cities, whatever you want, we can discuss. I'll have to read it. I bet you I probably have it here. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. All right. Well,
it's a far, far better thing we are doing than we have ever done.
Yeah.
And it is a far, far better place that we go to than we have ever gone.
Nice. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.